Snakes. Landmines. And grass fires. A podcast about real estate.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Snakes, Landmines, and Grass Fires. So here we are again at the Poodle Ranch. I want to welcome everyone. And today we're going to discuss the residential contract versus the commercial contract. Good morning, Lester.
Good morning. You are my charming, beautiful wife, Kay Langdon, also a real estate broker. Tell me, what is new at the Poodle Ranch?
We have two puppies. We had puppies over the weekend. So we have two boys, a black boy and a brown boy, available to buyers if you're listing.
And what else is new? We have a dog with four toes.
Yes, we have one dog that hurt herself and ripped off a toe, so she's in recovery.
But
she's
recovering very well.
Yeah, she's recovering.
I imagine that had to hurt.
Oh yeah.
So we did a podcast about each paragraph in the commercial Texas promulgated contract. We're going to now talk about the difference between the residential contract and the commercial contract. They're basically the same with some minor exceptions, except if you don't cross the T's and dot the I's, it may turn out to be not so minor. The commercial and the residential contracts have very similar features, except that the commercial contract is several pages longer and has more complicated wrinkles. Now, for my friends that want to sell residential homes, I do not want to appear disinterested or unqualified, because I think I sold homes for about 12 years, and I still do for friends. Single-family homes are much less complicated. There are fewer snakes, landmines, and grass fires. However, sometimes there are some unexpected snakes in the grass. The problems are usually not caused by the property itself. The challenges are caused by the people, the institutions, with changing personnel, guidelines, policy, rules, and laws. That's a moving target.
Okay, so what are the differences between residential and commercial?
Well, we need to know what rocks to turn over and which bushes to avoid in order to watch out for a snake. So we're not going to talk about any specific order. Residential properties may have different tax laws and exemptions. Your home is your castle. We have to pay careful attention to the effective date, the day that the contract clock starts to tick. Residential contracts are effective and start when both the buyer and the seller have signed the contract.
Okay, so residential contracts are effective and start when the buyer and the seller have signed the contract.
Right.
What about commercial contracts?
Commercial contracts are effective and start the date that the title company receives the contract, and they'll usually give you a receipt. The earnest money from the buyer is due within 3 days after the effective date, which includes weekends and holidays. The effective date also starts the option feasibility period, which after that then starts the days to terminate if you cannot get a loan with the terms specified in the commercial financing addendum. Therefore, we should know the residential and commercial contracts have different effective dates.
It's required to have a seller disclosure statement. Is that correct, Lester?
Yes, preferably when the home goes on the market. However, it can be 7 days after the effective date.
And what about commercial contracts? Are they required to have the property condition statement?
They are not required to have a commercial property statement, although there is a box to check which can require the property condition statement. If I represent the buyer and the contract requires the seller to provide the state form property condition statement, and the seller instead provides a private brokerage firm form statement of condition, is the seller then in breach of the contract for not having provided the state form? And can the buyer then void the contract at will? Maybe. That's clear as mud.
Really? No kidding.
So that can be our secret. Don't tell anyone about that.
Go over that one more time.
Okay. If I represent the buyer and the contract requires that the seller provide a state form property condition statement, and the seller then provides a property condition statement provided with different language that he got from a brokerage firm, is the seller then in breach of the contract for not having provided the state form, and can the buyer then void the contract at will? Maybe.
That's interesting.
It is interesting, isn't it? That happened to me last year, and we kept it a secret.
Okay. We won't mention it
because
to anyone.
Because the buyer wanted the property and didn't want to tell the seller he was in breach of contract. So if you're buying a house, the closing date can normally be written for 45 days after the effective date because residential appraisals are easier and quicker and also less expensive. Whereas a commercial closing date should normally be set for 75 days to 90 days after the effective date because it takes more time to do all the due diligence and get all the ducks in a row.
That makes total sense.
But sellers are always pressuring us to hurry up, hurry up, hurry up. And they don't always know, or their agent hasn't always told them that there's more ducks to get in a row. This allows several weeks for a $2,000 environmental phase one study by an environmental consultant.
If the property requires that, right?
Normally, if you're going to get a loan from a lender, they will require it, unless, of course, it's a residential property or an apartment property, multifamily property.
Okay.
I've never had a lender require an environmental study on a multifamily property, except for one bank that had a new, inexperienced loan officer who had primarily had experience with warehouse loans. After I helped a buyer buy a 40-unit multifamily property, several years later, I got a phone call from the buyer who was remodeling several of the apartment units. He said that the remodeling contractor required an environmental guideline to remove and dispose of some sheetrock. Another contractor who had previously remodeled it when it was owned by a previous buyer had caulked the joints between the sheetrock with caulk that contained asbestos.
Do they even sell that kind of caulk these days?
They sell it at a very well-known home repair big box retailer.
That should be outlawed.
Maybe they don't know about it.
Who doesn't know about it? The manufacturer?
Nobody in government. It may not even be made in the United States.
Okay.
But it's big
made
red.
In China?
So that's the only instance in which I've known of a residential property to have a...
That's amazing. I thought all of the asbestos products had been removed by our wonderful government.
Oops. So sometimes there are other documents to be given to the buyer by the seller. And it may be a owner association addendum. It could also be the brokerage firm seller disclosure notice addendum to the already existing state addendum. So there, in other words, there's more paper. Commercial loans are not regulated by the government, and lenders can offer different kinds of loans depending upon how strong the buyer is. You've got a bigger menu of types of loans you can get since it's not a regulated loan.
But residential loans are much easier and simpler, even though they're kind of getting complicated these days.
Yeah, they're government guaranteed, and they package them up, and they sell them to investors. So they've got to be more standardized. The appraisals for residential properties may cost anywhere from $600 to $800, and inspections and surveys cost approximately the same amount. Commercial inspections, appraisals, and surveys, and environmental studies may be each $2,000 or higher, depending on the size of the property and the complexity of the contract.
So generally, single family residential contracts are much easier and quicker with lower acquisition costs and fewer snakes.
Yes, fewer snakes. Yeah, smaller snakes.
Good, smaller snakes. Okay.
Once I was selling a duplex for a very nice elderly lady in Dallas, Texas. She had a duplex in Houston, and she had not signed any leases for the property apartments recently, and she thought it was vacant. However, the bottom two-bedroom apartment of the duplex was occupied by the dad and two teenage daughters and two German shepherds and two cats.
What, did they just kind of move in there?
They kind of moved there and
didn't
changed
sign
the lock.
A lease?
And they didn't tell the landlord they were moving in, and they changed the locks.
Shit.
And it got so bad that the inspector that was hired by the buyer during the option feasibility period, the inspector went in and refused to stay in. He just walked out and said that it smelled so bad he wouldn't do the inspection.
Ah, nasty. So what happened then?
The buyer bought it anyway.
Okay.
Without the inspection.
We had to obviously get rid of the dad and the German shepherds and the two cats.
Well, that I just kind of told them that we didn't want the seller to have to hire an attorney, and it would be easier if they moved out.
Ah, okay.
And so that's the difference between residential and commercial properties, and there are probably some that we didn't cover.
I'm sure there are lots of good stories out there that we can probably cover at a different date. What do you think? Well, thank you, everyone, for coming to this podcast and listening.
Go to our website at eustonius.com. That's eustonius.com. Or give us a call at 281-236-8189.
Thank you.